Prickly Pants Podcast. We are on episode 90. We're three friends, three writers, sharing not only our writing journeys, but a window into our conversations around the art of storytelling in the various formats like books, films, and video games, and also selective topics that make us ponder or generally piss us off. So let's start with introductions.
Hi, I'm Gabby.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Michelle. Welcome to Prickly Pens Podcast, and turning it over to Gabby.
Take it away, Gabby.
So this week, we're talking about rom-coms through the decades, through the years, because by the time this podcast episode comes out, it will be Valentine's Day.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Or close to Valentine's.
Yeah, close to Valentine's.
Close enough.
That on the 7th.
It should be every day, but let's move on.
The month of love.
The month of love, yeah. At least the day, the week of the love. Day.
Yeah, whatever. However you want to do it. or not.
Yeah. And yeah, I just want to go through, like, some rom-coms through the decades. Kind of like my favorite ones. Because I do like romantic comedies. I feel like one thing with romantic comedies, you can tell the humor or culture of the time based off of how the comedies, quote, or romantic comedies are.
It's a reflection.
Yeah, it's like a reflection of what is happening or what people think is
almost our idyllic taste of, or for comedy.
Yeah, taste for comedy, taste for humor, taste for levity.
And I guess back in the day, medieval, mm-hmm. when you had the Joker.
That's way back when.
Jester.
Jester. Yeah. That was like the Joker. I don't think he was called the Joker. No. The Jester. It was a way also to communicate also political and social things without getting your head chopped off.
Yeah. Satire, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was satire. Mm-hmm. And then you had, during Shakespeare's time, he most of his plays would have been considered romantic comedies in our standards, especially his later ones, because he's late 1900s. He's late 1500s, so like Midsummer Night Dream.
That one's
technically a romantic comedy. Much Ado About Nothing, technically a romantic comedy. So it's definitely reflection more of what was happening in 1590, more so than now, but
right.
But their idea of love, which clearly there was an idea of love you have with Romeo and Juliet of like young love. Since Valentine's Day is coming up and I wanted to talk about romantic comedies, versus the normal comedies. I wanted to start I have like a list of comedies that I just really like from different mm-hmm. decades. I think mm-hmm. the earliest one I could think of was from the 50s. Ooh. So I was surprised that I knew a movie from the 50s. But my favorite, one of my favorite ones was The Houseboat. It came out in 1958.
Sophia Loren and Cary Grant.
Yeah, Cary Grant, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of kids.
Yeah, it's like the dad has like three kids, like two sons and a daughter. And he separated from his wife and then his wife died, I think, is the plot. And it's kind of, it reminds me a little bit of, what's the one with Sound of Music, where it's like the woman, she's not a nanny. I forgot what.
Nun? Isn't she a nun? One of them was a nun.
No, she's not a nun. She was, Sophia Loren, she plays a woman who's like the daughter of a conductor or something that happens to be at the same show that they were at. And she meets the dad. And then it's just kind of the antics of, and then, they go to live on a houseboat. So it's like the antics of that and the dad and her getting together. And it's just this very sweet movie. And I remember I watched it back in the day, but I remember loving it. But yeah, it came out, like I said, in 1958. But in my head, I was like, that was the only 50s ones I recognize. I went through a bunch of romantic comedy lists
right.
in different eras
yeah.
and or decades and stuff. And it's like, that was probably the only one from the 50s that
I'll have to watch that.
Knew. It's yeah. good. It's really good.
I think that girl Friday or.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
With Carrie. Again, Carrie was romantic comedy material.
Right, exactly. So, yeah,
so,
Carrie Grant.
And you just switch out the different,
different
actresses
as the lead lady. Yeah. He was the,
yeah.
I don't know yeah. what you would call it.
Yeah, leading man.
Leading man.
Yeah.
But could do, it could do, he had good timing for comedy.
Mm.
I would say that.
I feel like, I mean, this is only one movie, but definitely, I guess, for the 50s, mixture of showing a single dad,
mm-hmm.
you didn't probably see a lot. It's late 50s, but it's like seeing a single dad, and then a single dad get married, and the kids actually liking the woman, and it's more of a, I guess, sweeter story. Yeah. I mean, it's the antics of the kids playing pranks and stuff, but in terms of the ending is like everyone likes each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's close proximity kind of comedy. So yeah. like Affair
proximity.
To Remember.
Oh, I love Affair Force to Remember.
Force proximity. Yeah, yeah. Not close proximity. I will
Call
make
it what
up
you
my
want.
Own terms. But yeah, Affair to Remember. Oh, they were on the boat first.
Right.
And then.
And kept running into each other, even though they wanted to. Yeah. Oh, The King and I.
Mm-hmm.
When did that
come
out?
Also a good one. I've never seen that.
I think that's 50s.
Is it?
50s?
I thought so too.
Yeah. Maybe 60s, early 60s.
Deborah Carr.
I've only heard of.
I like Deborah Carr because she was in The Quiet Man with John Wayne.
Oh, yeah. You're right. 1956.
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen that. Is that good?
The Quiet Man?
Yeah.
He was a boxer.
I don't like
and
John Wayne
she,
because we found out later.
Yes, we found out later.
Was, but anyway.
Yeah. But it was set in Ireland and she's playing this sassy, feisty Irish woman. And, you know, he's the boxer. I know he was a boxer and stuff like that. I think he was a boxer. But again, it's... I find that those comedies, the people were older.
Mm. Yeah, true.
The comedy was...
Like the 50s?
Yeah. You know, like, it was definitely for adult, very adult market.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's true.
Because, the romance between, I guess, Carrie and Sophia would have been... He would have been definitely in his 40s.
Yeah.
If late 30s, I guess. And she looks maybe like... She doesn't look young. Like, she's not supposed to be playing this... She's a bubbly character, but she's not playing, like, a 22-year-old. She looks like she's playing, like, a 30-year-old woman who's just very nice and bubbly and stuff. So it's, like, both are adult, full adults.
Yeah.
Unquestionably adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the same thing with Grace Kelly and Cary Grant.
Yeah.
One where he was a cat burglar and set in Monaco. Which is where around the time she met the Prince of Monaco and then got married.
Right.
And I can see the movie and I cannot remember the name. But again, the very mature characters, very romantic.
Yeah.
Theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very romantic.
Very romantic. Definitely happy ending.
Yeah.
Like almost like I said, unquestionably happy ever after. A lot more slapstick humor, which is not surprising. For that time period. Compared to now, like, I don't want to see as much slapstick.
Yeah, it's very witty banter.
Yeah.
Yes. The dialogue.
The dialogue was big.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah. And for moving on to the 60s, I only knew two movies from the 60s. I knew, or I guess three. Breakfast at Tiffany's. Which I've seen a bunch of times.
Yep.
The Parent Trap.
Oh, The Parent Trap, yes.
Yeah, the original Parent Trap. And then I consider The Sound of Music a romantic comedy, even though
too.
It's more like a family comedy.
Right.
Or family musical comedy.
It's like a lighthearted comedy.
Yeah.
Lighthearted
romance.
Yes. Yes. Movie.
Yeah. With some comedy, with some music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. With a deep theme of Nazi hatred in the background.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because it was there. It motivated everything mm-hmm. they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it didn't overshadow
the family story. Right.
Growing. It didn't. Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't. You weren't on the verge of tears.
No.
All the
right.
time.
No.
With it. Yeah. You were like upbeat and yeah. yes. you know, happy for the nun.
Right. So, it's so funny you say that because I was thinking before of adding a comment about how like fashion really played into a lot of the mm-hmm. romantic comedy that's like, you know, but then you think of like, you know, The Sound of Music and she's making like, you know, her clothes from the drapes.
And then she's in what, like yeah. a habit part yeah. of the yeah. movie and the yeah. other part. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. then when she came out in her dress, oh, it yes. was like. She had emerged
like as a like, princess, right? Almost, right,
and so it's very like you said, the fashion is symbolic,
yeah, yeah.
it is,
and
right.
has a metaphor,
yeah,
in the movies.
I mean, you look at like I said, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and it's you know gorgeous dresses,
right?
that what Audrey Hepburn has,
yeah,
and of course it has like now because of that film, it, you know, there's iconic parts of New York
yeah.
just because of that movie where people right. just go to stand by
yeah.
a street sign or a door
yeah. right.
because that's where the movie took place at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. And for
Parent Trap is more of like, it feels more like Houseboat where it's more classic, yeah, the older couple,
family, yeah.
family, mm-hmm. family romance yeah. sort of thing.
A lot of antics with the kids.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of the antics with the kids.
Breakfast for Tiffany?
At Tiffany's.
You are so close.
In front of Tiffany.
Next to Tiffany.
Behind Tiffany.
I think this was also, for the 60s, I suppose, in terms of politics and social issues. She was married and then she left. The guy was old. Mm-hmm. She was married young. She married at a young age to this person. She was not this pristine character.
No.
That maybe the 50s had.
Yeah. Right. It was she unheard of. Exactly. And
she was also very young.
Mm-hmm.
You had the young, wild character yeah. versus like a woman who's more mature and
yeah, she didn't commit.
That you see more 50s.
Yeah. And she lived, you know, she didn't worry about tomorrow. It was about today and so on. And like I said, he couldn't afford the place. He was being kept by the woman who dropped him off at the very beginning. But she was expecting him to give out for
oh.
the place.
And, give it up.
Right, give it up. You see, I'm getting it there.
There you go.
Getting close. And as he falls in love with Holly Golightly,
right.
he's more conflicted about being this
kept man.
This kept man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think they overtly say that, but you get enough clues.
Right.
Yeah.
That
right.
you're like, okay, this is what's going
yeah.
on.
Mm-hmm. And this was written by Truman Capote, who
I did not know that.
Was very, yeah, it's a short story that he wrote. And now on Hulu, they have a series of one of his big tell all about the rich people he used to hang out with, and they basically got together after he outed them with because he had their confidence, but he was a drunk, really heavy drunk at that point.
Oh
and,
boy!
And he just did a salacious tell all and
name they, names,
right? And ooh. So. The women got together and in Hulu series, it's like the first Housewives, you oh. know, thing, because it's with Naomi Watts and Demi Moore. And it's like oh. a whole bunch of them. Yeah. It's on Hulu, but going back to Truman Capote, given his style, he was the type to push buttons and cross, you know, standards and push
like
push
boundaries, right? Pushing boundaries.
Yeah. So that's what the 60s represent to me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, she, like I said, she was a, for me, I guess it's like she was a socialite. So it's like you had the young woman who was sophisticated and fun and bubbly and a little awkward.
She slept with people.
But I feel like now that's how you ended up the snowball of, like, you know, the pixie dream girl.
Mm-hmm.
Now started with her.
Go Lightly.
Yeah. Like, she was the first. Probably not technically the first, but like the first big one.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, her fashion, the fashion of that was also the thing. I always think of 60s fashion in movies because the fashion was gorgeous.
Immortalized in movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. For the 70s, I only knew one movie in the 70s, and that was Grease. Like, I realized I don't really know any 70s romantic movies, but I like Grease a lot. I think it's really good. Like the music, iconic music.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, I feel like that also, oddly enough, I feel like that solidified 50s fashion, despite it being a 70s movie, but of course it's set in the 50s.
Right.
Right.
You know, the stereotypical look of the 50s.
Yeah.
So I feel like that look is still around. Like, people still have, you know, maybe not the, you know, the pompadour hair, but they do have, like, the Letterman jacket.
Yeah.
You still have, like, guys with jeans and chucks. You do have girls.
With the Mary Janes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I forgot what they're called. But yeah. And you still have, like, the 1950s dresses where it's, like, the tighter fit at the top and then the bottom is, like,
the A style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like it's like it helped keep 50s fashion alive longer, but it made it, like, popular. Like, now it's like you see, like, a Chucks or what are the other ones?
I remember the candy slipper shoes because I had a pair. Oh. I'd break my ankles, but I'd wear them.
Converse shoes.
Yeah.
Which I used to wear Converse all the time. I still have a bunch in my closet. I love Converse. That's very 50s.
I wore those the ones, you know, the ones that she changed into when she was dancing with the heels. That's the one that I had is the candies.
Wow. Right.
And I remember walking from home to the bus stop all during school, get home and my feet are killing me. But
oh my God.
I had them.
You had the look, girl. I had the look.
I still think, too, like, a guy dressed in, like, a well-fitted pair of jeans, a white t-shirt, and a leather jacket looks good. Like, it's a solid look.
That's a very solid look.
Yeah.
I think as I look through the 70s ones, I will say the same thing like you. I know these by name, but I did not watch them. So Grease is in there, but it's also Butterflies Are Free.
Nope.
One with Play It Again, Sam, which is the one, oh gosh, what is his name? Woody Allen. So it's like Woody Allen's era of comedy.
Right.
And that, which is my least favorite.
Yeah, I would say I agree with that.
The Goodbye Girl, that's with Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason. So to me, these types of comedies outside of Grease were not they weren't pretty.
Yeah.
You know?
They weren't the idyllic.
Right.
Right.
So, like, Annie Hall. So again, it's that Woody
Mm-hmm.
Allen.
I would say, too, there's probably a lot more nudity than there was in the 60s and 50s.
It was more sexual.
More sexual.
Sexually.
Open.
Open.
Explicit.
Right.
For Grease, I mean, I know all the actors were well into their 20s and 30s, but it's like it's about teen love, and they don't shy away from teens having sex or the idea that teens have sex.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though they're being played by, like, you know,
this was also older actors. Barbara Streisand, with Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Robert Redford. What's Up, Doc? That's Ryan O'Neill and Barbra Streisand. So, again, not super duper young people.
Right.
Not super duper pretty people.
Right.
And not fashionably
on point.
Iconic. Right. So, so it's more, I guess it's still sort of physical.
Yeah.
More maybe about the issues of the day.
Yeah.
But it's not like, as I look at this, it's like, yeah, for me, I wasn't watching this, even after the 70s.
Right, exactly.
I wasn't watching those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, nor am I inclined to revisit Grease. Or visit
for
the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, the only one I watched was Grease and...
Oh, 10. 10 came out in 1979.
Never
that
heard
was
of it.
Oh, what's her
with
face?
Bo Derek.
Bo Derek.
Oh, yes.
But the only thing I remember is this the
nudity, right?
They talk about the, Bo Derek and and her
background,
and
right?
Hair. Yeah.
Right. And how she got to be where she
old
is
husband.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it was still nudity. Nudity was a big part of the I think. I don't know.
Yes. That, yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
I would say next decade, 80s. Yay. The ones that I know the most are like Dirty Dancing, which I love a lot.
Love it.
16 Candles.
That 80s
probably had the most that I like. They weren't romance movies that I knew, but I knew the comedy movies.
Right.
Or the generally romantic movies. Because I knew... kind of like Breakfast Club, which is not a romance. It's
but
just
there's a
teen comedy.
Story
yeah.
In there.
There's a romance, I guess, in it technically. Yeah. But
but we see the ages coming down.
Oh yeah, no, the ages are coming. The actors are now closer to the actual age that they're playing.
Exactly. True. It was so refreshing.
Yeah. So I think at that point Hollywood is catering
to teens, this felt like the era of like teens get to actually watch a story about teens versus the 70s, 60s,
more
and 50s
relatable.
Where like very like adult movies.
Yeah.
But this felt like this was made for teenagers.
Yeah.
Because you had, like Karate Kid and things like that.
Yeah. Which, Pretty in Pink.
It was the John Hughes era, right?
Definitely John Hughes. He ruled.
Yeah. He did.
Like he had the finger of the pulse for young adult.
Yeah. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
When Harry Met Sally.
Classic.
I see Top Gun and because it was him and what's her name?
It's like a broken.
Kelly McGillis.
Oh.
Kelly.
Yeah. So I feel like the '80s is when you're getting more of like a what you would consider rom-com today.
Like and the anthem for romance authors, Romancing the Stone.
Oh, Romancing the Stone. Oh, yes. Where you realize your dreams could come true.
Come true, right.
Joan Wilder? Are you Joan Wilder?
Writing her story and then crying at the end and then... what did she do? She drank wine and then she fed her cat tuna fish or whatever.
as a reward.
But it's like she had, she
a
had
ritual.
Her ritual.
Oh, I have to watch that again. Yeah. That was so good.
Yeah. Very classic romance comedy in for 80s.
Definitely. I feel like, the 80s, like I said, you're getting more to modern style of it, but it's like the era of people getting a little younger. Mm-hmm. It's being catered to people a little younger. Not as much, I would say, of the sex nudity of the 70s. I think the 70s was like the spike of like, we're trying just things. We're just doing things. And I feel like the 80s. Brought it back down to a...
Yeah. Do you think it was 70s, like the hippie generation?
Right. I think 70 was making a statement.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we could have this whole scene with the woman sitting in bed topless.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with it, but
nothing to do with somehow
it did not move the story forward, but whatever. Yeah.
Right, but we're going to show her her sexual liberation.
Free love.
By doing that.
Yeah. I feel like 80s girls. Like how almost the modern idea of the teenager, contemporary idea of the teenager, because I mean, the part of adolescence that's considered teenage wasn't a thing until like the '40s, because before you just worked after about 8 years old. So it's like there wasn't a teenage time. Yeah. So that didn't really come until like the late '40s and fifties after the war. Then it's like, okay, we have, here's teens, actual teenagers. Right. So I feel like it's not until the '80s, those kids had kids, you know, your guys' generation, Gen X, where it's like, teenagers that didn't have to, you didn't have, you know.
But those movies made lied about our teenage lives.
Oh, definitely.
It was idyllic going teens. To parties. We weren't getting able to get out of the house to go.
I mean, you didn't go through
a house party.
You didn't do a Ferris Bueller where you went through a parade in the middle of the day.
Exactly. Like skip school and hang around downtown.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think also, rom-com, if I'm as you're talking, I was like, the female character is never seems to always be very robust in, like, they're heavily a part of the comedy.
Yeah.
And with their own, like, a good solid backstory or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes two to tango to make this comedy work. So mm-hmm. with Joan Wilder in Romancing the Stone, she is quite capable to hold her own as with her career.
Right.
And then being an adventure-seeking person.
Exactly.
So it's just not the hero being the swashbuckler type.
Right.
So yeah. The 80s was very much, I think, even in its own way, had a lot of female empowerment mm-hmm. type movies.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So along with the sexual liberation,
you
are like doing 9 to 5 kind of thing. You have, mm-hmm. you have your own career, you have your own mm-hmm. choices to make and so on, of who you want to love and so on.
Yeah. And then for the 90s, I know, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Fools Rush In, which I loved.
Oh, Fools Rush In. Oh, R.I.P. Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
I never watched it.
Oh, it's really such
good.
A great
it's
movie.
Really, really good.
And you really get to know about the Mexican culture watching that. It's very funny.
It's what, Selma Hayek. Matthew Perry. Basically, they have a one night stand, she gets pregnant, and then it's them forced to be together kind of thing. Six Days, Seven Nights, which I also love.
I love that movie.
I love that movie.
Who's in that?
Nodding. That's
Harrison Ford and the woman that just died, that was married to Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, Anne Heche.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a fun, it's a fun movie. It starts right away. Yeah. It's
funny,
silly, and that movie is
it
good.
Was genuine. Yeah, it was really good. I love the part where I always love the part where they're on the island and he's about to catch one of the peacocks to eat, because they're on an island, basically they're straight on a stranded island, so there's no food, they're running out of like whatever.
Oh, they had a plane crash
on the island. It's just them two left, you know, not left, they're stuck together, almost like Tom Hanks's film Castaway.
Oh, wow.
So they're, you know, have no food, but there's a bunch of like wild peacocks on the beach. So he dresses up in like this bush thing to go catch one. And she's like, how could you? They're majestic creatures. And then he's like, they taste just like chicken.
So he's like the grumpy, grizzled hero.
Yeah.
And she's the perky career girl, you know, very driven and stuff. And he's just like, you know, he's seen life and and he's not getting excited about stuff. Yeah. And so they weren't together. He had his own girlfriend.
Yeah, she had her boyfriend. But on the island, right. Over time.
They're there. The guy from Friends was
there. Yeah, David Schwimmer.
Schwimmer.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Notting Hill, which I absolutely love. Notting Hill. Oh my gosh, it's probably one of my favorite 1990s rom-coms ever. It's so good.
But I call 90s the Brit kicking butt.
The British rom-coms just like
because they off the chain. They came with some iconic rom-coms that still are very classic to this time.
Yeah. Bridget Jones' Diaries.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if it was written by the Brits.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. Yeah. Four Weddings and a Funeral was them as well.
Yeah. Sense and Sensibility.
Shakespeare and Love.
I love Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shakespeare and Love.
Mm-hmm. This is Hugh Grant's era.
Yes.
He's a great romantic comedy.
When did his
Love Actually?
Love Actually.
The Englishman. Yes. Yeah. Mickey Blue Eyes, which I love. I don't think it did well in the theater, but
I've never heard of that before.
He was marrying the daughter of a mafia guy. Oh. And the mafia guy was the guy from Misery, Khan.
James Khan. Yeah.
So it was goofy and really good.
I think the 90s, I feel like that was the true, I mean, of course you had a bunch of romantic comedies in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, but I feel like from like the stuff that I started knowing, I mean, I was born in the 90s, but it's like the stuff I started knowing really from like 90s. 90s movies.
Sorry, it's okay.
well, my mom or my dad would play me a ton of movies.
Yeah, she was a baby in the 90s.
So
she's seeing the 90s in the 2000s.
A different lens. But I love that lens.
Or very late 90s, like in, you know, 99 or something.
So, yeah, Pretty Woman.
Yes. Oh, Pretty Woman.
Well, she was a prostitute, so I'm not.
She was a prostitute.
Yeah, you got, you know, Runaway Bride, was when what's her name?
Oh yeah,
she got run away from her.
Yeah, it was Julia.
Yeah. 10 Things I Hate About You.
It's funny because that launched a lot of romance books with runaway brides. I do remember that as a
Trope. It was his own category. Oh my gosh.
I feel like I feel like that was the explosion of rom-com. There's like an explosion in the 90s. Like there's just so many in the 90s.
But it seems like it got away from the YA from the 80s.
Yeah, it's no longer the teens again. This is adults. Yes.
We go back to more adult.
Yeah.
Yes, like
although teens didn't watch them.
Right. No,
teens watched these, but it definitely
but it wasn't catering
to teens.
To them, because Ghost, I remember Ghost with Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze.
Oh, that was
so
good.
Such a beautiful, beautiful story.
Whoopi Goldberg was in so
and
good,
everybody
that
did that. Everybody did that. The clay making thing.
that was like a meme. It's Saturday Night Live. And, everybody, Google that, please.
Yeah,
I feel like the 90s. You get the beginning of the almost Guess Who's Coming to Dinner sort of like interracial romance.
Oh, that was
romance.
A good movie too.
Yeah, I feel like you get that more in the 90s, where the romances are not always just white woman, white man.
Yeah.
Both in the 30s. It's like it's getting a little bit more diverse.
Well, one of the big, I would say, black cast movies of rom-com was Boomerang with Eddie Murphy, Halle Berry. And Robin Givens. That movie was so funny. Grace Jones and what's the other woman's she was the Batwoman back in the day.
Yes.
She'd purr.
Yes, oh my God, I can't remember her name. I see her face so clearly. I can see her face.
Black lady. Oh,
Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt. Yes. Classic.
But in Boomerang, if you have never seen Boomerang, whenever it comes out, watch it. Eddie Murphy was great in that. The women in there are hilarious. It is 90s humor.
Yes.
That style. I don't think anything too outrageous. But Eartha Kitt was silly and wonderful. Wonderfully
wonderful.
Silly.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Because she was after Eddie Murphy.
Now you have the, I would say, 2000s. Definitely my era. 2000s, 2010s are my era for sure. Mm-hmm. Favorite film, probably a romantic film of all time for me, Big Fat Greek Wedding. Came out 2002.
Oh,
it is fantastic.
That was so good.
It still holds up. I watched it recently and I'm like, I still laughed. I still loved it. Still smiled. I'm like, I love this movie. This is such a good, sweet film.
Yeah, I watched it when it was on. It might still even be streaming somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always streaming somewhere usually.
I did. I laughed out loud. And normally, you know, some of these rom coms, I don't fully laugh out loud.
Yeah.
They're just lighthearted, but that one has so many silly scenes.
Yeah. And it's so
good. And it's wholesome.
It's so wholesome. It's so sweet. The parents, it's like, I guess, similar to the, you know, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Home to Dinner type of plot where it's like a guy who is not of the same culture as them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the, like, the little antics in between that. But it's like they care about her.
Mm-hmm.
Like they try to, you know, I mean, at first they're like, no, but then it's like, okay, fine, you know.
Right.
But they try to help her as much as they can. And it's genuinely just a very sweet.
It's just so relatable. Just, just knowing like that we're from different cultures and we have our own things with our cultures that are that we believe in that people might be like, "What? That's not scientifically proven."
Right.
But
but we still doing like it anyway.
Yeah, because it's, you know, you pass it on to generations.
Yeah.
And then the main guy, his name, well, the character's name is Ian. He was also very accepting of her, like, in terms of, like, oh, we need to do this. And he's like, okay. You know, he wasn't like, no, I'm not doing that. He's just like, okay, sure.
He gave into her needs and so on and helped with her insecurities.
Yeah. I think
in a way that was refreshing for the male character to do.
Yeah.
Right.
For the female character.
Because
it was very much like he had, for one, nothing to lose. He had nothing to, not that she would be like disowned or something, but it's like he didn't lose anything from doing it. And he also respected her culture and her family.
Yeah.
But respected her for sure right away. Like it wasn't it was unquestionably like, okay, I'll, you know, if that's what I have to do to be with you.
Be with you.
I was
like, okay. He's like, I'll become great, Greek Orthodox member. Sure.
Yeah. And whether he believes in it or not doesn't really matter to him. It doesn't affect him.
Yeah.
Right.
He'll sit in that little kiddie pool and get christened in the church. So, it's funny because it's like when Gabby, when you're talking about a pimple and I'm like, use the Windex.
Yeah.
Great little Windex. I love that movie.
That's such a good one. You have Love Actually, which of course came out in 2003. Which is, you know, I guess that's with the vignettes, the little mini stories.
Another strength of British,
kind of pseudo
British comedy writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They can do ensembles really well.
Yeah, they're great. Great ensemble films. Also, another, like you said, great romance. And, I feel like British are pretty good at the romance. Mm-hmm. This is, like, consistent. At least since the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know their 80s romances.
and well, their comedy before then was, you know, because you had the Benny Hill and the Mr. Bean.
Oh yeah, style, like, that's very slapstick.
Bean, and I love that.
And so yeah, and then you had like Are You Being Served, which is again,
which is hilarious. It's hilarious. Dated as heck, it's but dated. Hilarious.
Yeah, because like we said, with the context of comedy, you can see where certain types of humor is no longer accepted. So back in the day, you might have humor that is making fun of somebody's culture or, you know, their looks or something like that. And that would be funny in the 80s or 70s. And now a movie wouldn't survive having a scene where you're making fun of another culture's looks or beliefs and things like that. Yeah. So you've got to come up with other ways.
Yeah. I feel like
to do your humor.
Comedy now, it's like you don't punch down with humor. And I feel like older comedy, or maybe even older comics, but older comedy definitely has that sort of thing of making fun of someone versus is like laughing at you versus laughing with you sort of thing.
Yeah. Also older people, they have that old sense of comedy that it's like really inappropriate.
Yeah. The punching down. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what they know.
Yeah. I mean, it matches the 60s, era. 70s, yep. 80s, yeah. Partial 90s. Yeah. You have 13 Going on 30, 50 First Dates, Guess Who, which is, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, is like a revamped version. Hitch, Wedding Crashers, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I absolutely love Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Right. The Proposal, 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, I love The Proposal.
Yeah. I think I was telling my mom how I feel like the 2000s, you had a lot more, like how I said the beginning of the 90s. Mm-hmm. You had a little bit more diversity. It's like the 2000s was way more diverse than the 90s in terms of like,
please, yeah,
like in terms of just having generally diverse casts. Mm-hmm. But then interracial couples, or couples that are just people of color, mm-hmm. Fully. I feel like at this point, definitely you had a mixture of the teen movie and the young adult movie. Mm-hmm. And the adult movie, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of like the age groups, there's more variety of styles of film that everyone has a little bit of, you know, can choose. Mm-hmm. Has, you know, everyone's kind of, what's it called? Everyone has a movie to watch. And then something like Guess Who, which is, what was it, Ashton Kutcher and,
Zoe.
Yeah.
Zoe Saldana.
Yeah. Which is interracial, black and white couple. Like Hitch, it's black and Hispanic, which is like you didn't see really until the 2000s or late 90s.
Right, that's true.
So I'm like, even that is getting more diverse. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Right.
I would
Except
say
Fool's Rush In was before its time.
Yeah, Fool's Rush In was 90s, but it was good.
Well, I mean, Hitch, even though she's Latina, that had nothing to do with the story.
Yeah.
Right.
And same thing with him, like him just being black
generic,
had nothing
it's
to
like
do.
Generic, right. Generic black and generic brown.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing to do with their story, not even their backgrounds. Most of their stuff was more of like the their hangups on whether she believes in love or not. And he's like kind of believes in love, but doesn't.
I just remember her pencil skirts.
Oh, yeah.
She was so, great. She was so fit.
Oh, my gosh.
She was so tiny.
I just remember the scene, too, where Will Smith, they go to like a sushi restaurant, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite.
And has an allergic reaction in his face. Half his face is all like blown up.
Right.
It was awesome because his whole thing was he was like,
he kept cool.
The
he was
guy a doctor. Who, like a professional.
Yeah.
Person who knew how to get people together, and
yeah,
he was doing all these things and they went horribly wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that was probably, I feel like, a very classic had the slight slapstick sort of humor in it. Very silly, but very sweet in the end. Yeah. One of my favorite ones was, of course, The Proposal.
Yeah. And that, when you think about it, because I've seen it recently enough to remember, the music had a huge role in adding to the levity of the situation.
To the windows. Take it away.
It had an old style. It had a 50s, like a tribute to the 50s rom-com with the Cary Grant and fill in the blank of whichever female.
Like a little sillier.
It was, but it was just the way the story unfolded and the side characters and so on who helped with the comedy, because Betty White was fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then the guy who was in charge of the computer place.
Yeah.
And the stripper.
Right. He was like the guy from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who did everything in the town.
Ray.
Ray.
He was like Ray.
But yeah, you know, and Sandra Bullock is great with romantic comedy too.
She's
so
fantastic.
She nailed it.
And Ryan Reynolds, that is that's his lane.
Yeah.
He can do.
Yeah. He's great.
He's great comedic
thing.
I love it.
In 2010s, the ones that I loved at least were like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is it's many things, where it's a romantic comedy, but it's also like action. Mm. And basically it's about a guy who wants to go get with a girl, but she has, you know, I think seven evil exes, I think it's seven, and he has to defeat them literally to get to her. So it was like a video game. It was originally a comic book, and I know it's becoming, I think it became an animated show on Netflix, or it's becoming a show on Netflix. I can't remember. You have Easy A, which I absolutely love, but I love Emma Stone. She's one of my favorite actresses.
Yeah,
like,
she's
fantastic.
Awesome.
But yeah, Easy A is I love it. Crazy Stupid Love, which is also Emma Stone. She's in that with Ryan Gosling. Warm Bodies, which is, I feel like that's when also you had the beginning of a lot of after post Twilight, which came out in like 2009.
Right. Nicholas Holt was in that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had a lot more of the super natural romances. And Warm Bodies being a zombie and a human. And then you have About Time, which is with...
Oh, I love that. Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams. I remember her last name. I couldn't remember the first name. Yeah, Rachel McAdams. And the son of the guy who plays Mad-Eye Moody. I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is a very sweet film. It's British.
It's so
again,
sweet.
The British are fantastic at romantic comedies. It's maybe drier humor. It's more sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Nye's in it. He plays
Bill Nye, I love him.
Dad. But it's a very sweet movie. And it's again, it was like the British just can really pull off sweet romance.
Is this the part where we were talking that characters now were a little more nerdy?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the regular.
Yeah.
It's
like you had the kind of quirkier character.
Mm-hmm. Socially awkward.
Yeah.
Yes.
With the person isn't necessarily like cool or something. It just might be normal or average person.
Yeah.
But it's like quirkier character falling in love.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And kind of part of the theme of the movie is like, be yourself, you know, or don't be afraid to be yourself. Sort of thing, or unabashedly be yourself, which you had like the popularity, I think, of TV shows like The Big Bang Theory, where you had geek and nerd culture becoming popular. Of course, that show, but then all the Marvel movies, it's like those are all comic book stuff, which in the 80s would have been like the nerdy thing, and a lot of comedy movies like the nerds watched that and stuff, and now it's like those things are some of the most popular movies.
Right.
Yeah. And that, you know, especially 2010s, it's like the most popular movies that are being made, the most watched. So they're part of the culture. So it's no longer this niche thing.
So when she was, when she had, Gabby had identified these movies, and we noticed that the geek or the nerd or whatever was being getting their time in the sun, I was thinking also about romance books, where the rom-coms, there were a ton of rom-coms with nerdy heroes, or geeky heroes. And there was, and when I looked it up, there were several authors that we know, Julia, okay. And I think Susan Elizabeth Phillips is one who had a nerdy hero. But there was somebody back in the day where it was part of her titling series. So it was like the nerd into this and the nerd into that. And it really did well. Then it became a subcategory of, or a subgenre of rom-com to have the geek or the nerd.
The geek or the nerd, yeah.
As the hero, just like how we have the billionaire series, you have the nerd series. So it was, and it was that whole everyday person can get, you know,
the girl
can find their love too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then you had, like late 2010s, Love, Simon, Crazy Rich Asians, and To All the Boys I Loved Before, which, it's like, by this point, you had, for one, I absolutely love Simon. So you had gay romance, or LGBTQ plus romance, that wasn't ending tragically, wasn't a, and both died, someone dies of a disease, someone gets shot. There was none of that. parents are accepting in the end. Yeah. You know, friends are accepting in the end. Fantastic. So, not a tragic gay romance. Mm-hmm. And then Crazy Rich Asians, which is, of course, one of the first films, if not the first, to have a fully Asian, East Asian cast. Or Southeast Asian
in the West.
In the West. Yeah. In America. In good old US of A.
Right.
And which it had a little bit of a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner vibe, but within classism, more so than race. And then a show, Prime, Amazon Prime movie, To All the Boys I Loved Before, which is a more of a sweet teen.
It
was teen.
On Netflix. It may have meant Amazon, but I think I watched it on.
Yeah, very sweet teen romance. Because
it's three movies.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The first one is To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Yeah, Lex likes it, and he was like, you gotta watch it. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the main actress, good. I think she's Asian as well, Asian-American. Asian. So, again, it's like, I feel like 2010s, you're getting way more diverse cast, diverse sexualities. It's getting 2010s, it's like getting way more diverse. Anything after 2000s is just, it's definitely modern sensibilities. Now, the 2020s, I was like, there's not that many romantic comedies. I was looking them up. I was like, I've never heard of any of these films.
It's called COVID-19. Well, I'm not going to kiss that.
I said we stopped being
fun.
We stopped being funny. Funny stuff.
I noticed that. I was like, when I was looking at stuff, there's not the comedies are not as robust as they used to be. Mm-hmm. There's not nearly as many comedies as there were earlier. Or at least they're not as, there's comedies, but they're not as like mainstream funny. No, everyone's not talking about the same comedy. They're talking about very intense movies. Like, go watch Squid Game, which is intense as heck.
Squid Game,
absolutely. Definitely love
not
it.
Not a love story.
But not a love story, It's not, you don't
not
laugh.
Not romantic comedy at all.
So stuff like that. And so there's not that many. Mm-hmm. My favorite ones that I only had three, which is Holiday, which I talked about in the podcast earlier, which wasn't bad. I would rewatch it easily. Happiest Season, which was with Kristen Stewart, and I can't remember the actress's name, but it's a LGBTQ romance, lesbian couple that Kristen's partner is going home for the holidays. They take her with her, and they have to pretend that they're only just roommates. Meanwhile, even though one of the sisters kind of is like, don't you guys only have one bedroom? Like, right. Because they have like a one bedroom apartment. But yeah, so it was like those antics. So it felt very much like a 2010s movie with the slapsticky humor, but it was funny. And then you had like Red, White, and Royal Blue,
which is
genuinely a sweet, funny, very close to classic romantic comedy, very much in that vein. And I've even watched a few others, and I was like, I've realized that the movies that tend to be more classic rom-com now are LGBTQ movies. So I found myself watching more LGBTQ movies because it's like, they're the good ones. They're the good romantic. Yeah. The straight ones are intense as heck. And I'm like, I want to escape. The world is already on fire. I don't need to keep watching it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
like I don't need to keep watching these intense movies. But the comedies now are not as robust as they used to be. Yeah. And I feel like,
well,
Gen Z, I was like Gen Z / Alpha, whoever's young now. And it's like, I don't know, you know, I was telling my mom, I was like, maybe they just need to relax a little bit. Go watch a comedy. Well, go make comedies.
Well, I guess they're not the ones writing the stories.
Yeah.
So is it that we feel we're so intense?
It's millennials.
That we're so intense on issues, on life, on angst and stuff that we feel there's no room. That we like, it's almost like a guilty pleasure that you shouldn't be laughing at this time,
which is
in our lives because fill in the blank of whatever is going on
there's
and what's
a lot
wrong,
of bad
and
stuff
so
going
therefore,
on.
How dare you?
I think it's weird because
want levity
because you had like in the 40s at the beginning, of course, of film and television and all that. There were so many comedies, and it was during a world war, and that was the explosion of comedy was in the 40s. There's so many movies and shows and plays and animated movies that came out to make people forget for just a second. So normally during very intense times, there's an explosion of comedy. Right. Meanwhile, it's almost like the opposite now. It's like intense times, intense movies. Meanwhile, I'm like, I think we need comedies again. I think people need to come out with like things that just make you laugh.
But I wonder,
and it's okay.
Yeah, but I wonder if the writers of rom-com, you know, now that we've ushered in probably a new set of rom-com writers, that they don't meet with our being the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s type of comedy. They're not meeting our needs with what they are producing. And then the style of comedy, which is not necessarily physical comedy, which is not necessarily witty banter. It's not the Matthew McConaughey and Han, whatever.
Goldie?
Not Goldie, because that's the mother. The daughter is.
Yeah.
Kate Hudson.
Okay.
Let me help you.
But... you know, that style of comedy, that's not what's happening. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking through the rom-com list. First of all, I don't know these people. That's the problem, too. The actors.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of them.
Yeah.
So
I know them. It's just that, like, it's like, so, I know the movie, and I'm like, that's not even really that funny. But I feel like, because I remember looking at some, when I was, you know, researching for this topic a little bit, I was looking at people online, and you had a ton of people, especially millennials and older Gen Z, who rewatch ones from the 2010s and 2000s because it's like, oh, I want to go back and watch a comedy. I'm going to go back to the 2010s. And it's like the fact that we have to keep going back. I have to keep going back to the old movies to go find a movie that's just funny.
Yeah.
And or just has a light tone to it. And not now, that like, the world, you know, I hear like, oh, well, the, you know, I've seen online like, oh, the world is very serious now. I'm like, it was still serious back then. Like, you think it was okay?
Yeah.
We were not peaceful. But
you
were able
to,
fantastic writing that it just made you, it's escapism for a moment.
Yeah.
And you don't really have that.
I mean, teen rom-coms, what they have listed is Jennifer Lawrence in No Hard Feelings. And I remember that was where she was
a tutor or something
with the young guy and so on. So yeah. Even the setup of it, I didn't care for. Beautiful disaster. The map of tiny perfect things. The half of it, along for the ride, spontaneous prom, which stars Meryl Streep.
I've heard of prom, but
if you're doing a teen rom-com, I'm not expecting Meryl Streep to be the top. And James Garden, somebody, and Nicole Kidman. I'm like, well, who's the teen?
Yeah.
If it's about prom.
he's all that.
Yeah.
Crush. To All the Boys, Always and Forever. That's the sequel to the other one. And to the All the Boys, P.S. I Love You.
So they have one movie.
Confessions. They get
one trilogy of movies.
Confessions of a Invisible Girl. And it looks like she's wearing thick glasses and the guy's taking her glasses off. Hello, Goodbye, and Everything in Between. The Kissing Booths.
Yeah, I know The Kissing Booth.
Under the...
Well, that's what you got. Kissing
Something
Booth.
Sun. Not Tuscan. And My Love, which looks like a Korean,
yeah,
maybe rom-com. So none of these I know. Even, of course, even I'm the, just like, not the my sweet, age group.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not the age group for it. But like even the sweet romance is like, despite the fact that most of these are the 2000s and 2010s, despite the fact that some of them were not catered to a certain age group, other age groups still watched it. Like, yeah, Love Actually is for right. everyone to watch.
Yeah.
Like, right. any age group can watch that and still enjoy it.
Yeah.
You don't get that with the more, like, recent movies.
Exactly.
Like, it's not just this universal, hey, that was just a really good movie. Let's, you know, or The Proposal. I watched The Proposal when I was a teenager when it came out. I was 15.
Yeah.
It was a really good movie.
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, these movies are not, like, great movies. I mean, the list you read, Michelle, I knew the first one with Jennifer Lawrence, and I watched it, and I was like, you know, it was funny, but I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to watch it again. Yeah, I wouldn't. You know what I mean? It's not memorable.
Yeah. So, even the romances aren't as memorable. I mean, you have big ones. You had, like, After... that series, you have Kissing Booth, and like I said, To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Those are probably the big three that I've heard of, that I've seen partially for some of them, that I hear people have talked about. But then at the same time, people will talk about, like, oh, it's too campy, or oh, it's too cheesy. And I'm like, the whole point of romance is just going to turn your brain off and just enjoy the moment. Like, don't think too hard about it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, this is not realistic. It's not supposed to be.
It's not supposed
to be. It's a rom-com. It's not supposed to. Even if it's not a com of the comedy part, or it's just a light romance. But I'm like, the whole point of the genre is to just watch it, enjoy it, move on. Like, it's not, you're not supposed to... You're not supposed to do a film analysis after the film is done. Like, like, I'm not writing essays about Big Fat Greek Wedding. I love it, but, you know, I just watch it, enjoy it, and then move on. So you don't, it's definitely a different time, but I'm hoping, I'm like, please, someone make some comedies.
I mean, they have
2020s doesn't have, we're already almost halfway in 2020s. It's 2024. There's not enough comedies.
No.
Good comedies, you know? The decade is halfway done. Come on now, people. It's like, we need some comedy.
So, and the books could be, there could be genuine romantic comedy books out there that just need to be adapted for the movies versus, you know, writing
a raw one. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like Fire Island, I told my mom about.
Oh, fantastic, Fire Island. Yeah.
Fantastic that was LGBT.
Really great. Yeah.
And again, another, like, it maybe it was a genuine comedy.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, the dude who wrote it writes for SNL, but it kind of helps.
It was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I said, we need more romances and comedies. Like that's the two genres that you kind of like. You know, it's entertainment. It's escapism. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be realistic. None of these are realistic. As much as I love them, none of them are realistic. Probably the most realistic one I've watched is maybe Love, Simon. Maybe. So it's like all these aren't realistic. That's okay.
But I think we, even our superhero movies, we look at it and we want something to make it as realistic as possible. Even though it's a superhero, we want the context of where he or she's moving in to be, you know, to make it seem, make me believe that I am right there with them.
Yeah.
And then the same attitude is about fantasy. Make the fantasy be epic, but also make it feel like Dune, like make me feel like I'm there, which Dune does. So if everybody's screaming about relatability and authenticity, then they're coming with that same vibe, I think, for the rom-coms.
Yeah.
When that isn't, to me, yeah. is not a necessary part of the equation.
Yeah. It's like, to me, I feel like a lot of rom-coms, maybe they don't have the authenticity, but they're sincere.
Right.
Sincerely sweet. Sincerely funny.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's a little campy, it's almost sincere about it. And I feel like that is what is missing now a little mm-hmm. bit. Or it's like you said, for the, you know, people want real, this extreme realism.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, this, you know, this relationship wouldn't work. And it's like, does that matter? like rom-coms to me are like mini fantasies.
Yeah. Cause I wonder if Four Weddings and a Funeral would work
now.
You know, like if they were like, it's coming out this summer and you put a trailer of Four Weddings and a Funeral up, would it have the same tug?
Yeah.
For the romantics at heart, those who like the lighthearted comedies and so on, would it work? Or would it have to be streamed, like go straight to stream, because
yeah.
that's where you might reach your audience versus those who want to pay, you know, $15 or whatever it is to go watch Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah.
But
I feel like people are missing comedies a little bit. I feel like I'm not the only one, because I've seen people talk about it online. I've seen like how Dungeons and Dragons, that lovely action comedy.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
I see a lot of people online talk, like I was looking at reviews and stuff, and people are like, gosh, it's just funny. And they're like, it was a nice movie. And it's like, I feel like people are missing, like clearly there's a hole for just comedies, just movies that are lighthearted on purpose. Like they're just purposely right. lighthearted fun. And there's not that many fun movies like that. And mm-hmm. so when people were talking about even Red, White, and Blue, Royal Blue, and like I said, Dungeons & Dragons, a lot of the discourses online was, man, these were just fun. Mm-hmm. They were just fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was sweet. It was fun. It was sincere.
Yeah.
You could just turn your brain off and watch it. It's like, clearly, yeah. that's missing.
But I think the big thing for those was the how well-written they were.
Yeah.
And again, that's my, I think, when the romantic comedies don't hit, it's a lot of times it's the writing and then maybe the actors, but it's the beats yeah. of the story not hitting well. And Red, White, and Royal Blue, because I watched it so many times, the beats of that story is so good. And that's because the original source material was good also when I read the book. But it's like things are constantly unfolding, but constantly unfolding in a funny way too. Or everything has a no matter how serious it is, there is a comedic side to it.
Mm.
So whenever there's a problem, there's a comedic side to it
mm.
that either caused the problem or is part of the funny solution.
Yeah.
to the problem.
Reminds me of Schitt's Creek.
That's good writing.
That's
too.
Fantastic writing.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and that has a romance in it. It's a comedy.
Yeah,
comedy show.
Yeah,
where they get into silly antics
and they hit serious issues with but still with a funny edge to it.
Yeah, yeah. And in the end, it's still a happy ending, which is what
is.
A romantic yes. comedy always requires is a happy ending.
Yeah.
Because
you could break out any of those couples, or even if it's not even if you're breaking out a couple that's not a romance, there is an element to, it could be a movie, a romance with comedic elements in it, or a comedy with romantic elements. Because the writing is so good and the characters are so developed, you know, so you could have the parents and you can have the kids and you can have the woman in the diner.
Twyla.
All of them individually can carry their own story with a comedy. So,
yeah. But... yeah, so that's romantic comedies. Like I said, if there's any, I don't know, book other authors listening or writers for movies or shows, write some comedies if you can. Not everyone is a good comedy writer, so if you can't
even taking that challenge on.
But the ones that are really good at comedy, it's like we need some. We need, like, the world's lacking humor.
Yeah,
we're lacking fun.
Yeah.
Yes, I know everything is, like I said earlier, everything's on fire. I don't think the fire's going out anytime soon, so can we at least get a sprinkle?
Yeah.
a little something.
I mean, they should make some of Susan Elizabeth Phillips' books into movies. She is so funny. She's so funny. But has great stories, great plot, great characters. Mm-hmm. But laugh out loud moments, definitely.
Yeah.
But yes.
All right, Julia.
Oh, yes. Take it away. Julia.
Me. Julia's Corner.
So sit back and relax. And welcome to Julia's Corner. Today, since we were talking about rom-coms, I thought it would be great if we investigated how other people in the world, you know, basically celebrate, you know, Valentine's Day. I almost said Thanksgiving. So I found this on today.com, and the article was written by Barbara Valesi Zito and Sarah Lemire. I hope I said that correctly. So basically, I really never thought about how other people celebrated Valentine's Day. And as you know, it should be, every day should be Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. You should be very loving to other people around you. But I will continue on. So for example, with us, you know, it's become very commercialized and people buy cards and chocolates or jewelry, which, I mean, jewelry's nice. Continue that tradition, people. But I mean, yeah, it's been, you know, commercials, blah, blah, blah. But in Finland, celebrating Valentine's Day, in which significant others are honored with gifts, they instead celebrate, and I am going to really mess this up, Ystävänpäivä. It translates to Friendship Day, people. That's right. Okay. That's what they do. They shower love and affection to, you know, their friends and people that they value in their lives, which is really sweet. I never really thought that it would be like that. And then in Spain, they basically honor San Valentín or Saint Valentine. And it's much like how we celebrate it with romantic, you know, gifts, dinners, yada, yada, yada. But it's really nice that there's actually like a saint that they're celebrating. And it's also customary for men to give sweethearts like silk scarves or handkerchiefs with marzipan. It's a tradition known as Mokora. Okay, we'll continue on to the Czech Republic. It's basically known as the Day of Love. And it's actually on May 1st instead of February 14th, which I also didn't even consider that there might be like a different day.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
It's tradition for, you know, couples to visit a statue of the Czech poet Karel Hynek Mača. And it's near a cherry tree grove. And, you know, they kiss under the tree and it's for luck. And so that's sweet.
Yeah.
In Denmark, basically friends and family swap lovers cards, which range in sentiment from touching to hilarious. They might even write a joke. And the signature is written only using dots called Gekabrev. The letters feature intricate paper cutouts with a short message or poem. France, especially Paris, has been considered one of the most romantic destinations on the planet. And it's basically, you know, when February 14th rolls around, lovers trade letters, cards, or give gifts, just like we do. Mm-hmm. So, mano a mano, they're basically, you know, what we do. In Germany, couples, wait a minute, who exchange pig-shaped gifts. Okay. Apparently the pig is a symbol of both love and lust. And it's not uncommon to receive pig statues or stuffed animals and more. Okay, that's a little disturbing, but we'll go with it. Flowers and chocolates also shared. And let's move on to Mexico. Let's see. February 14th is El Día de Amor y Amistad. So basically, it's the day of love and friendship. And basically, you can celebrate with flowers, cards. I'm very disturbed by stuffed animals, but that's what it says. Maybe they mean plushies.
Yeah. It'd be plushies.
Oh, what are you thinking? I was thinking taxidermy stuffed
animals. Oh, no. Okay, because I was like a teddy bear.
No, foreign countries. I am so sorry. That was unconscious bias. So plushies. And more.
So did you think you were getting a stuffed pig?
I was like, yeah. Stuffed it would be little, animals.
Yeah, almost, stuffed animals. Like those plushy things. Don't know like why a Beanie
my
Baby.
My mind was like plushies.
When
okay,
you said that was disturbing, I was like, okay, I don't find it disturbing. But
I mean, I was like, they stare. I mean, I don't know if you didn't like
so
the.
I'm so sorry. Unconscious bias. I mean, even against my own people, I'm Mexico. I mean, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Germany. Germany too.
Here's
sorry.
Your dead pig. Happy Valentine's.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. Plushies.
Plushies.
Writers. Oh, next time, just use plushies for me. Okay. Uh-huh. So for the Philippines, the government is actually the one that hosts a huge ceremony en masse. So hundreds of people can tie the knot. That's so sweet.
That is okay.
Yeah. In Japan, chocolate is the way to celebrate Valentine's Day. And if you really love someone, you will get a Honmei Choco, which is a true love chocolate. But if you're a friend or relative, you'll enjoy a Giri Choco, which is an obligatory chocolate instead. Either way, sweet days to all. South Africa, let's see, it's actually celebrated on February 15th in honor of the Roman festival Lupercalia. That's because women literally wear their heart on their sleeves, so they write their object of affection, or the name of the object of their affection on a slip of paper and pin it to their sleeve.
Oh.
That's bold. Okay, let's move
scary.
On. I mean, that's, yeah.
If it okay. was not returned.
Oh.
I would have put none of your business.
Well, I presume it's not a person's name. Is it a person's name?
Yeah. It says they'll write the name.
I mean, I assume it's probably like high schoolers doing that mainly or something, you know, or kids. Like, I don't think it's like 30-year-old
women. Well, if you're married to someone, you better have your husband or wife's name or partner's name.
But this sounds like something, like I said, teens do. Like, this might be like 18 and younger crowd doing this more so than like, you know, full-blown adults.
If you're listening in South Africa, please write. We need more explanation. Okay. Mm-hmm. South Korea, flowers, gifts, and chocolate, at least for the men, it says. So women gift their men with chocolate and men respond in kind a month later on what is called the White Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And singles are also given their day on April 14th, and this is also known as Black Day.
Yeah, and you eat black bean noodles on Black Day if you're single.
That's what
it makes
says.
Your teeth.
You go,
it makes
Gabby.
Your teeth and lips a little black. It's delicious, but is it? It's for single people, so they get their day too.
Finally,
So you see people on that day go out and black bean noodles, eating black bean noodles.
There was a restaurant around here that served it.
Yeah, they sell black. It's nearby. It's like 10-minute drive. It's still around. It's so, so good. I ate it so much when I was in Korea. So
yeah, she liked it.
It was really good. Yeah.
All the single ladies.
Yeah. Very single. I have not yet, had to not eat it. You know?
I'm sure you could still eat it if you were. Don't be worried. Two more to go. In Taiwan, love is basically shown by giving flowers as a token. So men will give huge bouquets on February 14th and later again on July 7th. So that's so sweet. And if you're in Taiwan and receive a bouquet of exactly 108 roses, someone is asking you to marry them.
108?
108,
that's
exactly.
That's massive.
That is amazing.
What if they only had 107 and the person didn't count right? Or, is
Am
that
I supposed
an insult?
To count that?
I don't know.
No. I think you just guessed.
Well, I think it's one of those that, as a couple, when you see...
A bunch of roses.
Bouquet come out.
You know what it means.
Out. You know that the proposal is coming. Is coming.
Coming.
Yeah.
That's a big sign.
That's a big sign.
Yeah.
Try hiding that behind your back.
I know.
I feel like that's one of those where you put it on, I don't know, a table that the room that you're about to propose to the person.
Yeah,
in,
right. It's sitting there already. It's delivered.
A table of roses, and then you do the proposal.
Right.
Oh, I know Oprah does these huge bouquets because Quinta. Mm-hmm. And from Abbott Elementary, she got bouquets for winning whatever awards she won recently. And the thing came in on this big, platter, this trolley thing on the set. And it was just this massive floral bouquet.
Oh, from
thingy.
Oprah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
but other people have seen, it's like, her bouquets are never, it's never the hand-delivered type.
It's wheeled
huge.
In. I can be your friend, Oprah. Do you know what's funny? I mentioned her the other day to my niece because, she had to read for school as a homework assignment. And I said to her, one of the things I do or one of my tips for having to read something is, and I would always do this, I don't know why, her voice is very soothing to me. Mm-hmm. So when I'm reading, something like research, I make it so that in my mind, it's her voice reading it to me.
You. Yeah.
And it works. It's just, all those years of watching the Oprah Winfrey show. It's just very soothing. But last, and let's get back to it. Last but not least is Italy. It celebrates La Festa degli Innamorati. I hope I didn't say that incorrectly. In commemoration of Juno, the goddess of women and marriage. Mm-hmm. So old school tradition is the first man a single woman sees on February 14th will become her husband. Run, do not walk to the nearest plane. Just kidding. I was trying to be funny. You can cut that out, Gabby. It's a common gift of romantic partners. It's well-loved Perugini Bacchi chocolates. They're basically delectable chocolate candies with a hazelnut or sweet cherry center covered by wrappers featuring poetic sentiments. Yeah, I love those. But yeah, that's what it was really weird. Yeah, old school tradition.
So if a man didn't want to get married, then I guess he didn't go out that day.
I guess not. I mean, I have questions.
The minute you walk out.
That's why I was like, run, don't walk. Get out of there. Don't do it. Yeah. Mm, so, okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. I have more questions than answers, but yeah.
Right. Well, it's good to see that around the world, for part of the world, that it has morphed and adapted to whatever, culture or social norms and things like that. I see more people here doing other things that don't require a couple, yes. since a lot of people are on their own. And so they have more, it's more like a, somebody they'll have like a self-love kind of thing. So people right. all will do the tea lights and the flowers and the wine and chocolates just for themselves. Yeah. All right. So we're going to wrap up yeah. the okay. episode and
happy Valentine's Day or yeah. as it comes
happy
up.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yep.
And watch Red, White, and Royal Blue. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
I watched it like, I don't know how many times.
I'm in the double digits at this point, but.
And watch Big Fat Greek Wedding. Those are,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
lovely,
one.
Lovely, lovely yeah. movie.
All right. So, Julia.
And stay prickly.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.